Welcome to a new chapter in the journey of Dan Really Likes Wine, where after 8 and a bit years, we have finally succumbed to the peer pressure of moving into the podcast space. But very happily so. We've had a lot of people talk to us about their enjoyment of the show, their engagement with it, but they'd love to be able to listen in to the conversations we have as they're drifting off to work, or they're heading to gym, or they're spending some time where listening to something's possible, but watching is perhaps not. And so if we were going to go with a podcast, why not go with one of my great friends in the wine industry, one of the great characters in the wine industry, and somebody who, most importantly, and you would probably bring me some very nice wine, which is exactly what he has done. It is an extremely warm welcome. A great pleasure to kick this series off with Duncan Savage.
How's it, Dan?
I got to check first, because you have no Instagram account, you have no Twitter account, you're not on YouTube, you're not on Facebook, you're not even on MySpace. Do you know what a podcast is, Duncan Savage?
I do indeed. We do have Instagram, but it's not on my phone.
There's a wonderful old school touch to you, which I love, and it speaks to everything you've done in this quite remarkable career of yours. And I think sometimes we forget, when we see people like yourself, or like an Eben Sardi, and Andrea Mullenhue, and Ardy Badenhorst, these aristocrats of South African wine of a certain era, that it was not always thus. And that if we go back 25, 30 years, there was a young, hopeful winemaker wanting to try and make it in the industry.
Everyone's got to start somewhere. Right? There's always a journey, and I think that's the thing. So, I mean, I had it sounds crazy, but I mean, I'd grown up at Rensselaerwenterbosch, came from Durban, had no.
These are not natural winemaker traits.
Although there have been quite a few winemakers from Rensselaerwenterbosch, but the thing that was quite cool was. You know, it sounds terrible saying this, but our first wine experience was, you know, downing autumn harvest crackling on the rugby field before we went to things, and then going, you know, to
what an under 14 team that was.
Under 13, actually. No, you know, just, you know, the random places that it starts, and then going home and seeing your mother with a glass of wine and asking her for a sip, and realizing after downing a bottle of autumn harvest crackling that this other stuff actually tastes amazing. And once you go down that rabbit hole, and fall in love with wine, there's no turning back. And I had this amazing sort of dynamic where I'd sort of messed up this BCom, and my dad had a bit of patience with me, and I came with this idea that I wanted to go and study at Elsenburg. And I went off to this place, not knowing anything about wine, just knowing that I knew about wine at that stage because I was doing these Cape Wine Academy courses, and I was starting to fall in love with the stuff, which was amazing. So that was the reason for going to Elsenburg. But at Elsenburg, you know, it's a different dynamic. It's farm college. You drink a lot of brandy and Coke. But we also drank a lot of good wine, and we got to meet amazing people. And that's why some of these wines I brought today link to the story of the journey that I've had getting into wine, which is really cool.
It's a very particular journey to take. You can go and do a BCom, albeit very unsuccessfully, or you can go and do a marketing diploma, or you can go and study accountancy. These, or even something like law, can lead into a whole lot of different spaces. If you're going to study winemaking, it does narrow quite dramatically the scope of work that awaits should you continue down that path. So you must have had a pretty good sense that, yep, you know what, BCom, not so much, but winemaking, this is Duncan Savage.
Yeah, look, I mean, I went from, you know, the usual story with young guys, you at the bar with your mates, you know, putting all your cash together to have a good night. And it quickly changed from whatever cash we could scrounge together, it was to go to Canoncorp and try and see if I could afford a bottle of Canoncorp Pinotage at the time, was what I was so taken by. And that was the thing. When I went to Elsenburg, I knew I'd found what I wanted to do. I'd always tell people the story. After the first week, I remember still phoning my dad, because I'm also an English oak, you know. So when you get to Elsenburg, the oaks, they try and firstly like beat the Afrikaans into you. And I've subsequently become, I mean, I love it. The oaks used to call me wannabe Boer there at Elsenburg. But after the first week, I thought, geez, this was a big mistake. But by the end of the second week, that the value of that introduction, and I know people are obviously so concerned about initiation and all of that these days, but the way it brought all the students together, you know, black, white, pink or blue, English, Afrikaans, whatever, it was phenomenal. And I think that was so cool. We had this unit at Elsenburg where we moved around in packs. And I've told you many times before, it's almost like how we operate in the wine industry today. you know, we want to sell South Africa to people. So we traveling in packs and firstly, keep your mates out of trouble and they keep you out of trouble. And secondly, you fly the South African flag in groups. And that was quite cool to see that camaraderie at Elsenburg. And going back to these days, you know, we had our, every year there's a gathering. And I went last year and we ended up at the Klapmuts Hotel just for old time's sake and had a really crazy night. But just, you know, seeing all these guys, and a lot of them aren't necessarily still in wine, but you keep a bond with great South African farmers, and that's the coolest thing.
The adventures that you've had have been many all over the world. Probably my favorite visual reference point is a photo I have of you and Bula Gerber, and one more, I can't remember who it was, but I think you're standing naked in a fountain or in a barrel of water somewhere as one of these many, many misadventures. This is one of the more repeatable ones. But just as wine is about so much more than wine, so the travel around wine is so much more than just that.
Look, you know, the thing is that particular, I have to quickly... we used to always go to the Michelangelo Hotel because it was the only bar that was open at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was always inevitably around the Cape Winemakers Guild events because you had put 40 winemakers into the same hotel.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. And I remember that now, we had a few nights in that fountain. Niels Verberg was there as well. And you'll notice our hands are all strategically positioned because it was in winter in Joburg, so it was pretty cold. But it was myself, Bula Gerber, and a guy called Matt Kroener. And we just had a great time that night after being told not to do it by the security guard. He was actually the one who ended up taking the photo. And we still had a bit of a joke at the time that we were going to release a wine called Brokeback Fountain with the three of us sitting on the label naked with our hands, you know, positioned in a way. But it's a stupid story. But again, it summarizes, you know, the general chaos of the industry. And I think, yes, a crazy night that it could have happened anywhere. It all happens around the wine industry, and it's about a group of people that go out, whether it's in South Africa or in the world, like I say, to fly the flag of this amazing country that we live in. And it's amazing. Like I you know, you meet so many people in the UK, around the world, who are South Africans, who are making their mark around the world, who've chosen to leave, and for whatever reason, you know, some people have made that decision. But I'm so proud to still be here and be a part of this place. And I think that, you know, there's so many people who are passionate about South Africa and want to make a difference in this country. And yes, we're trying to make a difference in the wine industry and grow the wine industry. But if everyone looks after their particular domain, and that's that age-old thing of, you know, whatever you do, leave it to the next generation in a better state. And I think there's a real good core of people in the industry at the moment that are doing a very good job of that. That the next generation, guys we spoke about earlier, the Sam Lamsons, the Bernard Bredels, all these guys, they take the baton. You know, we took it from guys like Jan Boerland, Neil Ellis. You know, Neil Ellis is the guy that paved the way for us to do what I do, you know. First guy to buy grapes and take them to different areas and do different things. Absolute legend. So every generation needs to pass down a baton in better shape than the previous generation received it.
You were 23 when your journey really kicked off at Cape Point. At 23, I was finishing matric and trying to negotiate more pocket money. Slightly different stages of life for us. You are now the kind of custodian figure that the likes of Neil Ellis were to your career and this young generation. As we chatted about this morning over breakfast, who are coming through, guys like Benelli, who are looking up to you. And you have that reminder, not just of the memories of these winemakers you interacted with, but with the wine they leave us with. And I said slightly in jest that I invited you on because you'd bring some good wine, but you've over the years introduced me to some delights, many of them your own. These are not, but these are wines I suspect you have quite a strong affinity with, because not only are they great wines, but both brands are such an intrinsic part of the South African wine story. And for the first of those, we go back to 1970, which is the year of my parents' birth, where we find a wine from a label that's still going, slightly different name today, but still going. And this is taking us back now, 54 years to 1970. And as with all wine of this sort of age, it's so much more than just wine. It's storytelling, it's time travel, it's culture in a bottle.
Look, there's that, you know, you have to know where you came from in order to move forward. And it's, I think that Kanonkop was, oh, sorry, you're talking about the Vergenoegt obviously first, but Vergenoegt in terms of terroir is super interesting. You know, it's kind of a flat dynamic there, or flatter dynamic, but it's very close to the ocean and gets a lot of wind. And if you look at where a lot of the traditional plantings are now in Stellies, you know, a lot of guys in the Helderberg up on the slopes, a lot of very deep red soils, Huttons, Clavellis, all these kind of soils, which give a lot of vigor and vitality to the vines. Here you had a lot of wind, a lot of sort of slightly sandier soils, a lot of granite, but also some sandstone pockets in that. I sound like I claim to know Vergenoegt. I've not spent much time there. I've only drank a lot of the wines. But year in and year out, I've found that these old Vergenoegts never cease to amaze. And it was, you know, these wines come out of an old Umi who is very old, and his kids aren't interested in the wines, and we jumped in and bought some. And it's the sad thing about old South African wine is that a lot of it is not well stored. You know, I always say to people, like, you know, the guys are watching the Bokke on the big screen, the fire is raging and the wine, you know, so they can look at the Bokke, the Busman Tiafia, and still admire their wine rack just to the right. You know, it's all like one package there.
It's heartbreaking.
Which is not great for the ageability of these wines. So when you find a cellar that has a degree of good cellaring, it's quite exciting. And we jumped in here and I bought 200 bottles, Tace and Eben and a few guys have bought a bit of wine. And you take yourself, it's a lottery, because some of the bottles are not as good. This particular bottle we've got in front of us is not as good as the previous two. But there's a story about Stellenbosch and a story about our wine heritage. And I think this area, which is very maritime influence, you know, if you look at it, it's super interesting that, like, if I look at the world of wine now, we almost better poised than so many other countries. If you continental Europe now, Burgundy, 48 degrees north, Bordeaux, 44 degrees north, Bordeaux's maritime, so probably better off than Burgundy. Burgundy continental, crazy spikes now, heat, cold, frost, hail, all these things. We are marginal at 33, 34 degrees south, but with this massive aircon of the Atlantic on our doorstep, it really just moderates everything. So we have less heat spikes, less heat waves currently than what a lot of continental Europe is having. And I think we are very well poised as a result. And bringing together these two wines, especially the Vergenoegt, a very strong maritime connection, you know, that Southeaster or False Bay, wines that are great when young, but just the longevity of these wines is phenomenal. And I think it has a lot to do with the wind, slightly poorer soils, the tannin structure, the way it develops in that dynamic. I saw it at Cape Point, you know, the wind is interesting. The skins toughen up, the vines get a beating, you know, so they need to toughen up. And it's cool. And if you look at, like, another dynamic, there's a lot of old wines that it came from the Fora site. So if you look at that old Fora site, there has been sold. I think it's Chinese developers that bought it. I don't know what's going to happen there. But a lot of some of Stellenbosch's greatest wines came from that old Fora farm. The front section there, I don't know if that's classified Helderberg or whatever, but, you know, it's very close to the ocean and these southerly slopes, you know, and then obviously comes around the corner and you get sort of westerly slopes and some northerly angles as well. But incredible site because it's maritime. And you can just imagine, and I always use the example of when we were at, when I was working at Cape Point Vineyards, where I could be in Stellenbosch on a day and it would be 36, 37 degrees. And within an hour's drive between Stellenbosch and Cape Point, you'd drop down to 21 degrees, the run of the ocean. I mean, where in the world, if you're in Burgundy or you somewhere, you're not going to drive anywhere in a hurry where you're going to have a drop from 37 degrees to 21 degrees. It's impossible. I mean, that just shows you all the different sites and all that within that we can work with, all the different little nooks and crannies. It's amazing.
You start to dig down and you begin to realize just why there's no wine country quite like South Africa. And a wine country, and another reason why I love the fact you've brought these wines in, is it reminds people who kind of know and introduces people who don't to the fact that our wine has this ability to age. And the second of these wines here, this now goes back 50 years. We've got a 50-year-old bottle out of Kanonkop. Now it's a marquee property. It can sit quite happily with any of the big names of wine right around the world. And being able to dip back into 50 years of history just underlines that beautifully.
Completely. So this bottle actually came out of a cellar in Joburg. I had Eben and I had the first fantastic lunch with Michael Frisian a couple of months ago when Eben released his vintage. And it was amazing. We drank, you know, some incredible wines, old Rischborgs back to the 70s, 62 Penfold's Grange. And it made us start to think about, you know, it got us talking that day about the old South African wines. And I mean, you're going to be chatting to Jean Vincent just now. He's sitting in the room with us now. And Jean Vincent's been involved in some, you know, a lot of the recorking programs and all of that, like we discussed. And it's super important for us to protect our heritage. And I think the South African way over many years has been, if it's imported, it must be better. You know, it's like so many people have that sort of mindset. And we have to value our own old wines before we can move forward with what we're doing these days. It would have been so easy to sit here with a Grand Cru Burgundy or a First Growth or something like that, you know. But I would rather sit here with these wines because there's relevance to our journey with these wines. And Canon Corp for me was, that was the wine I wanted to own when I was 21 years old. I just wanted to own Canon Corp. And I would like a bottle here, a bottle there, because we didn't have cash. And when I was at Elsenburg, I went to Bayer's and I did my whole project on Pinotage because of the whole, you know, I just fell in love with Canon Corp Pinotage. And Bayer's is a legend. He was super welcoming. Obviously, you know, guys like Jan Boerland before Bayer's were also very sort of helpful in terms of all their knowledge. It's interesting because I've become such good friends with Artie Badenhorst, who's obviously married to Cornelia, who's Jan's daughter. And there's so many links within the industry, which is so cool. But to see this property, which is many people consider a first growth of South Africa, you know, evolve over the years, and not only just a first growth in that it's making good wines, it's a very good business. And I think the Kriegers have done a great job of managing that dynamic of running a business that's very successful, but still making very good wines. And to this day, as a result, I mean, I think Canon Corp Paul Sauer buy every year, Canon Corp Cabernet in years that I'm interested in, Stellenbosch Cabernet, I'll always buy the wines. And the 74 is the second vintage they ever made. You know, the 73 is as scarce as chicken's teeth. I think if I had a bottle of 73 and someone sent a picture of it, the Kriegers would phone me and make me a substantial offer to get it back, because I don't think they've got much of it themselves. But when I found these in the cellar in Joburg, we had no idea of the storage. Mouse Crosley, who works for Michael, shipped us, Eben and I, a couple of boxes down, and we just took a lottery. I mean, this bottle, the full level was terrible. We had to top the wines, put new corks in, and I think this wine is beautiful. It's showing much better than the Fagenhoek, because there's still fruit to the wine. But then, of course, 74 in South Africa was a fantastic vintage. You know, you remember the likes of the Niederberg Cabernet 74. I had the privilege of sitting at this wine lunch with it was the one time I've seen Eben, and I've told you the story very quiet, because Eben normally talks a lot. But that day he happened to sit next to Guy Kebbell, and Eben couldn't get a word in. But I happened to sit next to Igor Miller from, one of the most famous producers in the Mosel, you know, and in Germany. And it's just, that guy's wines are the stuff of legend. And I was sitting there, we were tasting his entire 09 vintage, and I was in awe of these wines. And this old dude sitting next to me in awe of the 74 Niederberg Cabernet. And it just at that time made me think, you know, that how much more we need to look at these old wines. And yes, like anything, you could pull an old bottle of Lafite and it'll be a dud. You know, that you're going to get the duds. But when you get them and they're good. Oh.
You mentioned that we could have been drinking Burgundy or Bordeaux of a similar vintage. As a highly respected and internationally acclaimed wine journalist, what I shall have to do is get you to bring a couple of those in for our next conversation, just to make sure that we have authenticated the comparative process therein. But I'm very happy that these are the wines that you've brought in, because they have not just been a joy in themselves, like Canon Corp in particular, but to be able to dip into the history and heritage of South African wine, which is a space you are a high priest of, and you have your passion for wine writ large across you, and especially South Africa, and that makes it the perfect way to get our podcast series underway. Sir Duncan Savage, thank you. Not just great wines, but some great recollections, and I look forward to maybe not 50-year-old, but let's see, as close as we can get, but sharing some 20, 30, 40-year-old Savage with you in due course, as we watch more generations of little Savages and little Nickels moving into their space in the wine industry, and enjoying just this completely unparalleled space that is time traveling through bottles of wine.
Awesome, Dan. Thanks for having me. It's always epic.
There we go. Cape Winemakers Guild member, champion of South African wine, a South African winemaker of the year, and most importantly, the king of Salt River, Duncan Savage.